honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a fascinating conversation with a resilient and certainly stoic World War II veteran named Dwayne Harvey. Originally from Oklahoma, he spent plenty of time in Kansas and has been in Albuquerque, New Mexico for the last two decades. At this time, 77 years ago, he was a 20-year-old paratrooper battling the Nazi regime in Europe. When we left off, Mr. Harvey had given us a powerful illustration of the seemingly arbitrary nature of casualties in war. Two men with whom he served, Fair and Gulick. One killed by artillery fire before he even encountered an enemy soldier. Another who made it through multiple campaigns before losing his life in the final hour of combat that the 501st Parachute Infantry Regiment experienced in World War II.
And I'm interested, too, because when Don Fair got killed, that was your first day of combat, too. Does that weigh on you? The fact that, hey, if that can happen to that guy, what's stopping it from happening to me?
No. Same way as a few days later, there's a place called Sinnenchamps, and I was out patrol. The rest of the troops was in the house because of the cold, and I heard some shells coming. So I was by the door, and this is a stone house, and I stepped in the door, and I stood. Here was a door, here was a wall, here was a window. So I stood up against that wall, and the shell hit outside, and the blackout curtains with the shutters blew in. I went back outside to finish my patrol. The next morning, when the patrol's over, I came in, I laid down on the floor and fell asleep. The morning when I woke up, I had no feelings in my legs. And I thought, well, I've laid here, and I've slept, and they've froze. So I thought, well, that's part of it. But then again, to move, and I thought, no, they've just gone to sleep. So I kept moving until I could move my legs and got feeling ever restored. And the shell hit outside, and there again, they started up. So I jumped up, started to run outside, and there was a tanker captain who had come up to the door, and he was laying across the door in front of me. His left leg was entirely gone, and he looked up at me and says, "Help me." And I looked down at him. My thought was, "No, I can't help you. You're done." So I ran on across the road. So later on, that barrage was over. I went into the house. Fella says, "Looky here." And there was the nose, the fuse cone, it was 75 shell. And there was the shell over in the corner. The fuse had spun off of it. And right here on the door jamb or the window jamb was a indentation and right where I'd been standing. So that was my real close incident to being killed.
One of them. But just to connect the dots for people as they're following along, this was a dud. The fuse had separated somehow. I mean, I don't think that happened very often. That was pretty rare, right? So, I mean, the odds of that happening in the doorway that you're standing, you wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be talking.
No. And there was another time when we was in after the Bastogne had been relieved. That's when we suffered most of our casualties, was after the relief, because then we were on the offensive. We was attacking. So there's one evening where the lieutenant came up, and we had a German Jew from New York who had left Germany after Kristallnacht. Brave, but I was going to say, you dig. That's if you're below ground, you're safer. So whenever I come up, I dug. That was religious with me, was to dig. Uh-huh. But Koppel come up, and we went up because the report had been a German platoon was behind the lines. It had come sorted through and sifted through and was behind the lines. And the major wanted to make sure that they were done. So the company was sweeping through the woods to find them. So Koppel, he wanted to go up and get some shooting in. So I went up, and the machine gunner was there. and he didn't have an assistant, so he wanted to ask me to jump in and feed the belt. So I said, okay. So I got in the foxhole with him. But there was no Germans in the woods, and so they'd cleaned them out. So the lieutenant came up and said, well, let's go back. So when he was talking with the platoon leader there, had a platoon that was in that sector, the Germans had the place under observation because they dropped six mortar rounds in, and it was boom, 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 back and forth. So I survived that. When that barrage was over, why we jumped up and went back to the back. But the next day, sometime after that, why one of the fellows told me that the machine gunner had got a direct hit in the hole.
So yet again, and these are starting to add up. I mean, that easily could have been you. If you were still there, you're gone too.
Yeah, but that was the way we lived.
And so I understand correctly. Your view of that is that's just the luck of the draw. That's what happens in war?
Yes.
And we've talked about getting to the Bulge and the things that happened after the Bulge, but there aren't a whole lot of guys still with us who can tell the story of what it was like to be in Bastogne during those days. And you had Christmas Eve, Christmas, and your birthday 3 days in a row. I don't know if you could focus on those realities, but you tell me. I don't know. You know. Tell me what it was like to be there and some of the things you saw or felt or experienced.
Well, I was in the Bulge. I knew where I was. I knew what I had to do. And there again, it was just like one night when I was in the foxhole, and I had a replacement, young kid again, was in there. And evidently he was just coming up because I didn't know him. But it took turns of every 2 hours being awake on. And so as it coming morning, and I'd been on alert, and he'd there. And I told him I was going to take a nap, but I said it's going to be daylight here in an hour or so, and the Germans, that's when they're going to be coming down the road. And so I took a nap, and he woke me up and was all excited that they're coming down the road. They're coming down the road. So I looked, and I could see the road was in defile, and you could see the heads. And he says, shall we shoot now? And I said, no, wait until they come out from that defilade where the road is there. And I says, then you can get a body shot on, because they talk about the Americans shooting. I'll relate a little more to that on. Well, before they got really in out of that defilade where the two of us could shoot, why, a machine gun opened up and on them. So that ended that threat. To me, that was just part of it. Here they're coming out. We're going to shoot them.
And did you have any concept of what the big picture was around that battle and the siege and all that?
We knew we were surrounded. But there again, my whole thing, as I say, is that little sector right in front of me. And I take care of my sector. If the fellow over to my right gets into trouble, I can help him defend his. I'll help him, or the fellow over here, his little sector there gets trouble, I'll help him, because you're going to help me if I get my trouble.
So you knew you were surrounded, but you didn't let that reality bother you?
No. We were paratroopers.
I mean, I'm imagining myself in your shoes, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are too. I mean, if you know you're surrounded and the planes can't fly because the weather's so bad, so they can't come and support you. I'm sure a lot of people would feel pretty helpless and scared in that scenario.
Well, as I said, we were volunteers. We were special. So if you're special, you do special things. And we had the attitude that we were special.
And as one day piled on to another, and it's not getting any warmer, and the big picture's not getting any clearer, same mindset?
You're there. You're going to do it.
And how about food? Did you have enough to eat?
No. But there again, that was wasn't starving. And so you got an occasional that. Now, in that sector of Sinning Champs, back behind was a, what was you call a chateau, was Ile La Hesse. A countess was there. The headquarters, the division headquarters, came out of Bastogne every night and stayed at Ile La Hesse on, because they were bombing Bastogne, and this was outside of Bastogne. Mm-hmm. So at night, we alternated staying in the foxholes at Sinning Champs outside, and then we'd go back to Ile La Hesse to defend Ile La Hesse if that was taken care of. That's where I spent Christmas, was at Ile La Hesse. But there again, there was all the colonels and the generals and everybody from the headquarters of the division there, and dining on tables, and we got a K-ration on there. And we would go back up to the foxholes in the evening and night, you know, not daytime. So while I was wandering around through the stable yards there, while there was a jeep there from where the officers were there, and I walked by that, I saw a sleeping bag. So I reached down and I picked up the sleeping bag, which was a down bag, and took it with me. So I had a down bag, and I carried with me in the winter that I crawled into. So that was one thing about keeping warm. Mm-hmm. I still have it.
So I'm just trying to keep score here, if you will. Cold didn't bother you. Being surrounded didn't bother you. Not having enough food didn't bother you. Did it at least make an impression for you or make you feel better when these bombers could finally fly and give you guys some air support?
Well, the C-47s and bombs and the bombs are there. Mm-hmm. And so when they finally flew over and made their drops, why, yes, that gave us, we got some supplies now.
Yeah, and I've talked to a lot of the guys who flew some of those bombing missions, but the C-47s were probably even more important to you because they could finally resupply you guys again. Is that like manna from heaven? I mean, what does that feel like when you know you're running out and all of a sudden here it comes?
Of course, they were off in the distance and you could see them. It really didn't affect us at that time because you didn't... didn't change anything of your life that day, because you stayed, you was there in the foxhole in the morning when they flew over, and the next day you were still in that foxhole, but you knew there'd been help, so that was, but it wasn't like they flew over and you were handed something.
Well, that makes sense. And I sure appreciate how real and candid this all is. Not a glamorized or Hollywood version of life on the front lines in World War II, but just how one young paratrooper really experienced it. Unfortunately, our time on the radio today is about to come to an end, but there's so much more of Mr. Harvey's story left to tell that we're going to make an exception and extend this conversation into next week's episode of Hometown Heroes. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.